So I tell my clients, like, you know, being in the market is like flying an airplane. You better do your homework before you take off.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to build the plane while you're flying
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat, a podcast about today's biggest business issues told from a Chicagoland perspective. Hello, Chicagoland. Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat. I'm Greg Bedloff, President and CEO of Choose DuPage, and your host for today's podcast. Today, I'm joined by a guest who has touched the lives of countless individuals in DuPage County and beyond. John Calamos Sr. served as a pilot in the United States Air Force, where he recorded hundreds of missions. Later, he went on to found Calamos Investments and Calamos Real Estate. Today, his business employs hundreds of DuPage County residents and have created some of the most iconic landmarks in DuPage County, including CityGate Center in Naperville. Beyond his own business, John is a prolific philanthropist and a powerful voice of our community. He also recently co-authored his own biography, which I look forward to discussing today. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And as I mentioned, there's a lot of stuff that I want to cover today, but let's start with your new biography, The Sky's the Limit. I'm fortunate owner of an autographed copy of it, which you were kind enough to sign for me. And I'm sure like many of our listeners, you've heard from them who have picked it up by now. And for those who haven't, what's it all about?
Well, I was encouraged to do this biography. We're coming up on almost 50 years in the business, and they wanted a sort of a view of the whole background. That's why we did the biography, and worked out very, very well, getting good feedback.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed reading it. And as you mentioned, it starts kind of with your childhood
right.
and the work ethic that your parents instilled in you. From Chicago and then into the military. Let's start there.
Yeah. If you remember the name of the book too, it's really about living the American dream. And that's kind of the theme behind it. Living the American dream and how did that happen? And so, we went through my childhood where, the one thing I learned from my parents is my work ethic. They worked all the time. We grew up in a grocery store in the western city of Chicago. And so throughout my childhood, I delivered groceries. I delivered papers, washed windows, did all that. So that's what I learned. My father was from Greece, so mm-hmm. was an immigrant family, and they were just trying to get by all the time. And
sure.
So it worked out very well.
And what happened to that grocery store over time?
They started the grocery store, and on the second floor is where we lived.
Yep.
They had the grocery store, and they've had it for 25 years or so,
mm-hmm.
And then they kind of retired and left, yeah.
And nobody in the family wanted to take over the grocery empire? You guys were on for bigger and better things?
Well, there's somebody in the family my father thought should take over the grocery store. So when I got back and I was in the investment business and I was on TV one time and he was watching me and he said, "Wow, you know, if you would have stayed in the grocery business, we'd be bigger than Dominick's today."
So that's but you had different plans.
I had different plans, right.
And that started in the United States Air Force Academy.
Well, actually, my plans started in the sense of during my work ethic, I once got a summer job from one of my classmates in high school to work at Motorola during the summer. And
in the city?
In the city, on Augusta Boulevard in the city. And boy, I thought, wow, pay was pretty good for me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And I was a junior in high school at that point. And I'm working there, and they had a bunch of women in there working. And they were yelling at me all the time. "Oh, you should do this. You should do this." You know, and I wonder if I could go to college. Okay. So I went to my high school. I said, am I qualified to go to college? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they looked at me and I said, I was. So it ended up, I ended up going to a college, University of Illinois. And I was the first in my family of any of our sure. cousins or any of me to go to college. Mm-hmm. So that was a big inspiration to me at that point.
And at U of I, what were you studying? What was your kind of career aspirations?
Yeah,
then?
I went to U of I and I started studying engineering there. Okay. And one of the things you had to do when you went to a public school like that, in those days, you had to join ROTC. So I picked Air Force ROTC at the time.
Okay.
And I at the University of Illinois, and I ended up going down to Champaign.
Okay. And the ROTC, is that kind of what led you into post-college, into the
yeah,
Air Force?
Yeah, actually, I went to University of Illinois in Champaign for about 2 years, and I was getting a little frustrated. And I, whenever I came back home on the weekends or anything, my mother and her sisters they started a laundromat, and they came home and I had to fix the machines. So I had to go in there and fix machines.
Okay.
And then I kind of decided I got interested in architecture. And I decided to transfer to Illinois Tech, IIT at
okay.
the time.
Yeah.
Because the study of architecture there.
Sure.
So I transferred from U of I up to IIT and okay. studied architecture. I started in architecture okay. there.
Commuting kind of back and forth from the west side down to,
yeah,
to IIT?
Yeah, I commuted back and forth, and I took over the laundromat in the laundromat business.
Okay.
And so I was working the laundromats, ended up with three, four laundromats.
Okay.
So
your first business?
Yeah.
Maybe this is something our listeners really don't know. So you're technically your first business prior to Calamos Investment in Real Estate. You're in the laundry business.
I was in the laundry business, and it was a new thing, and they just started a new concept where they did laundry, and then they had dry machines with it called uh-huh. Norwich Village.
Okay.
And I ended up opening the first Norwich Village right in Cicero.
Okay.
In that area, and it worked out very well. I was able to buy my 63 Corvette, so that was
perfect. Perfect.
So it was a good business.
So this is what I love having these conversations. What did owning that laundromat business, that laundry business, what'd you learn there? That's an entrepreneurialism, right?
Well,
that's
it was entrepreneurial, and I learned a lot of things. First of all, I had to pay my way through college.
Okay.
Because Illinois Tech was not a public school. So I needed to pay my way through college. And I did kind of learn the business. I just, you know, calculating everything and how to manage that mm-hmm. and manage the people. So mm-hmm. it was a learning situation, no
okay.
doubt.
Yeah. All right. So now you finish that up and
yeah.
You're done with college. Did you kind of divest yourself of the laundromats and then shift to a different avocation?
Yeah, actually, IIT, I switched my major two or three times. I went from architecture to finance to philosophy and economics. So I guess I was a bit of a confused student. I'm switching around quite
a bit. Well,
we
encourage kids today to change your major and
yeah, but
really
I learned a lot. The Illinois Tech, now IIT, what I liked about that is very good mentorship with the professors there. I could sit down and have coffee and talk about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
A very good dialogue, you know, and that was very helpful to me. Yeah.
Okay. And then so now have we reached graduation?
We're
a big party at the supermarket?
Yeah, we're close to my junior year there, ready to go my senior year. I was in ROTC at U of I, I saw sort of a picture of a guy in an airplane, a Navy guy in an airplane, going to land on a carrier saying, hey, this is my office. And I looked at that. I said, you know, I wonder if I could, you know, be a pilot. And so I walked over to the ROTC, Air Force ROTC at Illinois Tech, and I said, gee, I had 2 years of ROTC at Unibuy. Can I get in?
Uh-huh.
And they let me in, and 1 year later, I got graduated as a second lieutenant doing there. And then my college professor said, you know, there's a new program. What is that? It's called an MBA. I said, well, what's an MBA? the first year the MBA came out, he said, John, you got to do this. You got to do this. It's about finance and business and that. And so I went to ROTC. I said, can I take a delay on active duty to go to graduate school?
Sure.
I said, yes.
You okay.
can do that. So I got commissioned, but I didn't go on active duty for about 2 years. I was studying in there. And then finally in 1965, they said, you got to go. You got a class now. You have to go. And
so you're entering the United States Air Force with an undergraduate degree and an MBA.
Almost an MBA. I didn't quite finish. I needed one more course. I picked up that course in 1970 when I got out. But you're right. I had that experience.
Does the Air Force look at that from a leadership perspective and say, boy, this is a guy that we can work with and put in a leadership position?
Well, it was good on my resume. And I tell you, I learned a lot going to flight training. I had hardly ever been in an airplane. I only flew one commercial airplane once.
Yeah,
been
young kid with the Greek immigrant parents. I'm guessing you're not flying to Disney World every summer.
That's right, exactly. And flew in one little airplane once. And then I go to pilot training down in Texas. They had me take off and stuff, and it was a tremendous experience. And talk about having to be really focused. I had to focus on that completely.
Mm-hmm.
And from pilot training, went in for Harley flying. By 1 year later, we started with about 66 people in my class. 33 of us got our wings. And so it's tough. Every time you went up, it was like taking a test.
Mm-hmm.
And if you flunked the test, you had to take it over. And then if you flunked that, then you're out.
Yeah.
So it was total focus. And so I went from hardly being in an airplane. 1 year later, I'm flying T-38 supersonic jets in formation, supersonic, the whole thing. It was tremendous experience.
Yeah. And it sounds like between the laundromat, the supermarket, the other opportunities along the way, it was a recipe. You're adding a bunch of ingredients, including some leadership and some focus and everything along the way that sets you on a path towards the independent nature of your current operations right now.
I'm just really looking to see what I should be doing next and how I can do that. And I really one of the reasons I joined the Air Force was when JFK became president. And his opening speech was, don't ask what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Wow.
And that was very inspiring to me. Gee, how can I help the country? And that's when I went to the ROTC, joined that, wanted to become a pilot. And I think it was very important because one of the really critical things that I learned at IIT is I started taking philosophy classes. And what is the history of Western civilization? What is that? If I talk to kids today, they have no idea what that is. And when I really studied all that from Greek philosophy to what the Romans did and all that, it became very, very important. How America became what it was through the Western civilization and be innovative, creative in doing that. And so that was very important. Part of the philanthropy you mentioned earlier, what I did, I thought it was so important. I actually endowed a chair at IIT, Illinois Tech, in philosophy. So,
oh, wow. Here's a finance legend who's focused on philosophy.
Well, I also endowed a chair in business finance as well.
Okay.
But two chairs. But that was very important because it really helped me understand the world.
you're a product of the American dream, right? Yeah. I mean, parents coming here from Greece, the supermarket, the laundromat, on to college, ROTC. I'm assuming the military helped fund some of your college education.
Yeah.
Do you keep this as part of kind of your roots in terms of how you run your businesses today?
I think it's very important. It's very important to know that because it is part of the roots, because you have to understand what's going on in the world and what governments are doing, because my business is investments. My view is what's happening out there in the world, the markets are really a pulse of that. So if whatever is going on in the world there, then it's impacted by how the markets react.
And I was going to, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. So you've been doing this at Calamos since 77. So we're going on 50 years. You mentioned the pulse. Do you feel like the pulse is stronger now or more prominent now than it was in the 70s in terms of when a politician says something or when something happens politically or when something happens globally, the impact that it has on today's market versus the markets of the 70s and the 80s? You know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're asking. And it's been in debate all along, going back hundreds of years. How should the government be organized?
And you think it's getting louder today than it has been?
I think with social media, it surely is getting louder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And does it affect how you manage money and how you invest? Or do you believe in just, you know, Warren Buffett, no one's going to lose money betting on America and kind of basic principles? Where do you balance that political rhetoric versus sound strength?
Yeah, well, because, you know, it's not just buying one stock and everything else. Mm-hmm. It's looking for themes that may be a part of what's going on in the world today.
Okay.
So those different themes are really important in investing. AI, for example, is a major theme right now, just like the internet was in the 90s.
Sure.
Is a major theme. So looking at that and trying to look forward and seeing what industries will be impacted by that and what companies, and then how to invest in that is part of it.
So settle the debate for us then, John. You've been doing this for 50 years. You brought up AI. Every podcast we have, somebody brings up AI in the financial world, in Calamos investment, in Calamos real estate world, and in John Calamos's world. Yeah. Is it here to stay? Is it a game changer? And is it going to change the way we fundamentally manage our money?
Well, it's changing that already. We have AI stocks that have really gone up quite a bit. So it's in that initial process. So it's a bit confusing. There's no doubt about that. But it's not going away. AI is here, and how it's going to be managed going forward, and what companies will do better than others is really part of what's happening
today. Do you guys use it at Calamos Investments in terms of not AI companies, but do you use any AI tools internally?
We're learning how to do that. Yeah, we have a process.
Wow.
That we want to do that.
It's a game changer, isn't
it? Yeah, especially when we have what I've done with my company since I started it is every year we do interns. We come in and have kids right out of school come in, and they're so, you know, really focused on technology and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So we have 40 interns this year.
40.
And some of
I hope you have some philosophy majors as those interns.
Yeah.
Or some folks who are from IIT.
Oh, they don't seem to study philosophy in school anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so it's really, it's okay. Really important.
So you Calamos Investments, 1977. How does a younger John Calamos decide? Were you in the financial markets working for somebody else at the time, or how do you spin up Calamos Investments?
Well, the interesting part of that is, as you mentioned earlier, I was in the Air Force. I was on 5 years on active duty, and spent a year in Vietnam. And when I was ready to get out of the Air Force, back in 69-70, I actually was going to be an airline pilot, And I interviewed with Delta Airline. They liked the idea that I had a master's. And they And they gave me a class day. And then when I got out in 1970, the recession hit, and they canceled the class. And I had been studying the markets sort of like a hobby for years, even when I was in the Air Force. And so I did get a job as a stockbroker with a company, DuPont Gore Forgan at the time. And that company kind of merged with somebody else. And so throughout those early 70s, I was doing convertible bonds because what I was trying to do is the markets were very volatile. How do I manage risk? So I tell my clients, like, you know, being in the market is like flying an airplane. You better do your homework before you take off.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to build the plane while you're flying
it. So we, you know, I wanted to manage risk. So I got very interested in convertible bonds. And then the options market opened in 74. And I use options because a convertible is a bond with an option is what it is. And so that worked real well. And then in 1977, started the Calmos Investments.
And it was just you? You just
No, actually, it was three or four of us that started a company. And then in the 80s there, I broke off and was independent.
Any particular incident in your military time and or Vietnam, if you're comfortable talking about it, that was particularly memorable as it pertains to... You flew hundreds of missions.
Yeah.
There had to be a time when you had to make a critical decision on one of your missions. Anything you can share that was kind of something that you can kind of connect from the military days back to where you're at now?
Yeah, I think what I really learned from the military, again, like it, like I said in pilot training, is you really have to stay focused. And what I was in Vietnam was a forward air controller. So I used to have to control airstrikes. So I was being shot at a lot in doing that. And the other thing is a camaraderie you have within the squadron and everybody. You try and watch each other's backs and take care of each other. Mm-hmm. That was really something I learned. And even when I got out of the Air Force, although I didn't, you know, I didn't go to the airlines, I did go to the Air Force Reserves, so I flew fighter jets for 12 years in the Air Force Reserves, and the camaraderie with that group has been terrific. We still get together every year.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, so, John, I'm hearing just this underlying theme of entrepreneurialism and focus and camaraderie and everything. And you've been doing this for going on 50 years now. How are we doing in the area, in the country, kind of writ large, from an entrepreneurial perspective?
Yeah.
Are we giving folks the right tools, helping them along the way? Are we giving them too much? You know, we need more John Calamoses. We need more entrepreneurs.
I think we are getting more entrepreneurs, you know, especially in the AI and some of those other areas. But I think part of this is culture as well, and you know what I learned is that you really have to work hard and work doing that, and we've seen that throughout the years that innovation is really what creates opportunity and creates productivity for everybody. When you work hard and do the right things and do that, the wealth is a byproduct of that. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Did you get lucky at any point along the way? Because, you know, sometimes a little dose of luck is, I always believe it's where hard work meets opportunity. Yeah. That you get lucky. But is there anything that you just had like, wow, I just, you know, convertible bonds. No one was going into it. I went into it on a lark and kind of got lucky.
Well, I think that's true. I would consider that a lucky opportunity. And what it was, my Air Force experience was make sure you're managing risk carefully. And when I was studying the markets, it's, okay, how do I manage risk? So I came across them. So that was lucky. And in the business, too, the other real focus I had was make sure you adapt to the environment you're finding yourself in. Just don't, oh, I do this, this is right, then I don't have to do anymore. That's it forever.
You got to keep, you got to keep changing. You got to keep changing, evolving.
It's kind of like, you know, trying to ride a bike up a hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You, as soon as you stop pedaling, guess which way you're going?
You're going back down. Back.
You're going back down.
So we talked a little about Calamos Investments, but there's the real estate side of the business. Can't have a podcast talking about business in DuPage County without talking about real estate.
Yeah.
I read an article about Illinois is the prices are going up four times faster than the rest of the country. Interest rates, no inventory, 3% mortgage rates. What's your perspective on the current state of the real estate community, commercial and residential?
Yeah. Well, we let me just give the background on how we got here. When this, our original business was downtown Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and that was in Oak Brook. And then we had a small building in Warrenville here in Naperville.
Yep.
And did that. And then as I wanted to get the business bigger and we were growing, we built a campus, the City Gate area, which was a campus. And we built a couple office buildings there, built a hotel, Hotel Arista.
Yes,
and
sir.
We wanted a really kind of a family-oriented
live, work, play.
Live, work, and play, which has worked out very, very well. So it wasn't just, oh, I'm going to buy this and flip it, buy this and flip it, but really setting up a campus like mm-hmm. that, which has worked out very, very well.
And what about today's interest rates and what about today's market for real estate? Is it still... are you still bullish on
well,
it? Or
yeah,
you...
I remember I was on a panel with Sam Zell, who was really a
wow. I'm pioneer. Talking to a guy who was talking to Sam Zell here in my little podcast.
Well, he was terrific, and he says there's three things you have to worry about on real estate that you have to do. Well, what's those three things, Sam? Location, location, and location.
Okay.
So here is it, and that's where you have to think. Well, what is the government doing downside, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So
do you guys keep an eye on that? Is Powell going to drop? You know, everybody talked last year, three interest rates are coming, and then we got one, and now
I think interest rates are coming down. That's our view, is that the government here is doing the right thing with pressuring the Fed to lower rates.
Okay.
And interest rates have come down. That will help the real estate with mortgages coming down a bit. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, real estate, and it's all about different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look at Florida and other places.
Sure.
It's been going like crazy. But
and I know you guys just completed or in the process of completing the multifamily, the apartments out at City Gate, which adds to that live, work, play kind of a city within a city.
Yeah.
Anything more planned for there?
Yeah, it's just, we just adapted. I think originally the plan was to have more office mm-hmm. buildings, but office is not as popular as it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Sure.
So now we went to more apartments and things like that, and mm-hmm. that worked out very well. And we were in the sense of even building another one right there.
Great.
So, yeah.
I think I know the answer to this question, but you might surprise me. What is the John Calamos philosophy on the whole remote work and more office and coming into the office versus working remotely in your world with computers and everything else and modeling and everything? What's your...
Well, I think it's terrific. The technology has always been terrific because what it really does is increase productivity. That's what it saves companies money and increases productivity. We do require people to be in the office. You just don't work from home. Now, you can do things from home, but
mm-hmm.
but we want that culture to be in the office and be able to mix with people and talk to people and have that culture. So it's, you know, hopefully we're through with, you know, what happened before.
Sure. Hopefully we're in a post-COVID environment.
So in the post-COVID environment, we do want people to be in the office and be in teams and stuff.
Okay. Let's talk about the markets in general. New seems like every day I'm getting my report of a new market high. can't have a conversation about the markets without talking about tariffs and trade and international trade.
Yeah.
What are you telling your clients right now? What are you telling your customers?
Well, I think, again, if I go back to what I said earlier, what is government policy and how will that impact the markets? Well, the government policy from this administration is positive for economic growth overall, and that's going to be positive for the markets. The problem is, some of the issues, there's some uncertainty in there. But deregulation, cutting back on immigration, all this is positive overall for the U.S. economy. And so I think what we're in is, a kind of a volatile period, but overall it's looking positive a longer term. And in that, because, the deregulation is really important for a lot of the industry and putting the pressure on lower interest rates. And I think that's a positive. Working with tariffs so that we have a more free trade or we're not always the guy paying out on this, I think will be overall positive. The only problem with that, there's so much confusion about that. It's causing uncertainty, and that causes volatility in the market.
Sure.
But think a little bit more longer term, I think is positive.
Kind of that analogy you used before about, there's going to be ups and downs,
sure.
But if the long-term trajectory is still positive.
Yes.
And we had talks last year about kind of a soft landing from a recession perspective. Don't think the recession ever really materialized, at least as in my world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when we were talking about that, it's before they passed this tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if that hadn't gone through, I think that could have maybe caused a recession, because what they did was making sure taxes weren't going up. And I'm kind of in the 80s, during the Reagan administration and others, I'm a big supply-side economics from that point of view.
Okay.
Even when I was in college, I studied Milton Friedman.
Okay.
And that. So you want to be sure that the government isn't, you don't want this attitude, oh, we need more money, so we're going to raise taxes,
mm-hmm.
which is the opposite of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You want to lower taxes to raise more revenue for the government. And that's a debate going on, as you know, all the time. Well, who started that idea? You know who started that? JFK, a Democrat. The first thing he did when he came in office was lower taxes, get the economy going.
Okay.
And people don't realize that. They argue it's political. No, it's how to make the economy
economic
better. It's economic
basis.
Milton Friedman said the same thing. Hayek, when I were in philosopher, what would he say? You want everybody to be equal? Okay, you raise taxes for everybody to be equal, they will be equally poor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a debate going on, and it's
sure.
been going on forever.
Sure. But you said earlier, you've got to limit that noise or that debate in terms of your investment strategy and your advice to your clients. So
yes.
You're still making your decisions based on political issues, but
yeah.
there's still basic principles of investing. Yes?
Yes. Yes, there are. We're talking more about themes and global and what's happening, but then we get down to specific industries and the sectors and companies, mm-hmm. which ones are doing well. And we have analysts that investigate that real to a lot of detail. So it gets very complicated in that area.
So I know you have grandkids. What do you tell your grandkids these days about, investing? What, open a passbook savings account, buy a stock certificate? What do we tell the young people who are listening? Because they all listen to podcasts these days. So what do you say about a 401k versus a Roth IRA versus whatever?
Well, we bring them in and say, okay, be an intern, study this.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to motivate you? What inspires you? Well, that's what you want. What is inspiring you to do this or to that? When we remember when we hire people now, somebody once told me, you only want to hire PhDs. You know what a PhD is? Poor, hungry and determined.
I got to remember that one. Okay.
And that's what you want. You want somebody to be really motivated by what they want to do. If they're motivated on what they want to do, then they'll get through there.
Yeah. I remember, John, you were a panelist of ours at a Choose DuPage regional breakfast many moons ago. You may not remember this. Diane Swank was on our panel with you. And you and Diane were having a rather heated discussion about the role that small business plays versus big business. And something you said resonated with me because Diane was advocating for big business. And you said, well, let's not forget, Diane, that every one of those big businesses started as a small business.
Right.
Is there still the role for small business in today's economy, or is this merger and acquisition, and every time I pick up the paper, some company's buying another company? Is this good for business, or is this going to harm our economy in the long run?
No, it's not going to harm our economy. It's really positive for small businesses, and we need small businesses, and we really want to make sure that the regulatory climate inspires small businesses. That's what's happening, because with this technology, there's a lot of opportunity for younger generation to really take that and create businesses, and we're seeing that happen. So I think it's a positive out there, not a negative.
So you're not worried about three companies dominating the AI space 15, 20 years from now? They'll always be, as long as we get a good regulatory environment, there'll be that stream.
And the other positive right now to that is private equity and private credit. And that markets, I think, what they've done is going around the regulatory climate and said, okay, you want money, come to me. Oh, well, I should go to a bank. Well, the banks are overregulated. So private equity is providing capital for small businesses. And that's...
Well, I just learned something, because I've talked to half a dozen businesses in industries that I never thought would have been targets for private equity, and they're all considering selling to private equity. And then you say that to somebody and they're like, oh God, private equity's just taken over the world and it's just rich guys getting richer and everything. But you're saying that it's, in fact, they're investing in those small businesses.
Well, they're not only investing, is they're promoting it, and the rich guys getting richer are the ones that are starting those small companies. So nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing in my mind whatsoever. I'll switch gears a little bit, John. Sure. Philanthropy. You're a very philanthropic guy. You're a founding member of the board of directors of Choose DuPage. We can't thank you enough for that. You've done so much in DuPage and throughout the world. What was kind of your inspiration for philanthropy, and what kind of gets your juices flowing today from a philanthropic perspective?
Well, I think maybe it goes back to philosophy. When I studied philosophy and studied Socrates, you know, he said, well, first you're a student, then you're a soldier, then you're a businessman. And then you're a statesman, which is giving back. So I'm on the fourth phase now,
okay.
Giving back to the community and what I can help do. And, you know, I really learned a lot from my heritage, from my Greek immigrant father.
I'm Croatian, so we're neighbors.
We're neighbors. Yeah. So what I am now, I'm chairman of the National Hellenic Museum downtown Chicago, where we have a lot of events, and doing that. I also was a founder sponsor of the church in New York, St. Nicholas Shrine, over 9/11, curated that church there. There's a lot of local philanthropies that we continue to give. So we want to really help the community and help the world any way we can. I'm a trustee of Illinois Tech, where I went to college. Mm-hmm. I told you I chair two endowed,
two separate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Professors. So,
what are you seeing from the rest of the statesmen in your circle? Are they embracing philanthropy? Are they?
Yeah. We have a lot of friends that are really doing that. They've done a great job.
All right, let's wrap up a little bit here.
Sure.
So now the next generation of entrepreneurs is sitting in front of you at IIT or out at the boardroom in Calamos, at Calamos's offices, and they're looking at you for one thing, for just, you know, one chunk of advice or one pearl of wisdom. And they're, and when I say entrepreneurs, a John Calamos entrepreneur, a 12-year-old entrepreneur, not a 22-year-old or the John Calamos of post-IIT, but someone who you just look at that kid and think, man, this kid really needs to hang up their own shingle or go their own direction. What are you telling them?
Well,
or her?
You know, I want them to be really inspired and to be focused on some area. You know, I remember interviewing one of our interns, and she was great. She's doing this. She was in accounting, great accountant. And then when I interviewed her, she started telling me that she was the editor of their college newspaper, and she was doing this, and she edited this, and she edited that. And I said, well, what's that have to do with accounting? And I said, why did you go into accounting? She says, my father was an accountant. And what she was really was in marketing and in publishing and that. I said, you got to follow your inspiration there.
Okay.
And so that's what we try and do with the kids we talk to is, what's going to motivate you? What do you want to do? And how do you want to do that? That's and it's not about the money. The money is a byproduct on how you do. That's what it is.
I'm going to take that to heart. What about businesses? What about the small business that's starting up today? That young entrepreneur listened to John Calamos and said, I want to make widgets because my whole passion is about widgets.
Yeah.
And now they're starting up a business in today's environment that could be highly regulated, that could face governmental pressures.
Yeah.
Is it different than it was in the 70s? And what does that young business owner need to know or need to be aware of as they try to grow their organization?
Well, I think they have to, as they try and do what they're going to do, they'll have different things that they need to understand better and learn better about. Yeah, it's very different than when I was younger because technology today is so much a part of that. Technology is really a big deal in that sense.
So always be learning, kind of just continue to be that student. Do you still read a lot? Do you still try to keep up to date on news stuff?
Well, somebody asked me, John, are you going to retire?
I was going to ask, but that seemed like a very canned question.
Well,
but since you brought it up.
I said, what do you mean retire? Stop thinking? You know, so I like understanding what's happening and what's going on and that type of thing. So, yeah, I do try and keep tuned in on what's happening and what's really critical and also on how we build leadership teams and that type of thing.
All right. Well, John, seriously, what an honor, what a privilege to be able to spend some time with you and talk about your business. Thank you for your investment in DuPage County. Thank you for your investment in the state of Illinois. And mostly, thank you for giving back and helping the next generation figure out a way to move it forward.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you for all you do as well. Yeah, this Choose DuPage has been a very, very terrific organization. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for today's show. Mr. Calamos, thank you again for joining me. And as always, thank you to the College of DuPage for supporting today's episode. To keep up with what's happening in DuPage County and the Chicagoland region, follow Choose DuPage on social media or visit choosedupage.com. I'm Greg Budlove. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the DuPage Business Beat.